And now, instruction manuals to the ready, digital toolboxes primed, as we put on the safety goggles for a peek at this year's Flatpak Festival 2019. I caught up with festival director Ian Francis for an insight on this May Day Bank holiday's weird and wonderful programme of film, performance, installations, music and fun. So I'm here with Ian Francis, director of Flatpak Festival. So Ian, welcome.
Thanks.
We're hiding out in the corner of an exclusive coffee bar, which I won't mention in case the paparazzi find us. But I'm really excited because we're going to talk about Flatpak Festival 2019, which I think is its 13th.
This is number 13
incarnation.
Yeah.
So you're not worried by that kind of number at
all? A little bit. I have had occasional moments in the build-up where I thought, you know, that this superstition actually has a basis, and when things go wrong, then you think that maybe this festival was born under a bad sign and we should have renumbered it. But on the whole, it's all going pretty smoothly so far, touch wood.
So folks that don't know anything about Flatpak Festival, how would you best describe it? I've seen the words weird and wonderful.
We do end up using that as a bit of a stock phrase. It's a real mixture. It used to be Flatpak Film Festival for a while. We've actually dropped the name, the word film, from the name, mainly because it's such a mixture. Film is at the heart of everything that we do, and we do have straightforward, old-fashioned screenings in cinemas of interesting new work, short films, features, documentaries, you name it. But there's also a lot of performance, visual art, music, audio-visual stuff, all kinds of things, really. It's playing with the moving image and with film and showing all the different things that you can do with it. So there's a lot of live soundtracks. There's a walking tour of old cinemas. There's a bento workshop. But, you know, we're pulling in food and drink. It's very difficult to summarise in a snappy way, and we try and make a virtue of the eclecticism of the programme, I guess. That's a big part of it. The idea is that you dive in and try things out.
And as part of that eclecticism, which is a brilliant word, I'm going to use that word more, I think, you've got over 100 events, I think?
Yeah,
pretty much. About 14 venues?
Yeah.
So they're all across Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a number of different sort of places that people would know, or maybe they might not know.
Part of the idea is that we're animating all kinds of different spaces. That's why we're called Flatpak. The idea is it can happen anywhere. So as well as places like the Mockingbird and the Electric, we're also in the Rep, we're in Centrala, we're in, you know, we're taking over a little archway warehouse unit as our festival hub right next to the Custard Factory. And the sort of the focal point is really this part of Digbeth around the Custard Factory and down Floodgate Street and also into the city centre.
And you kind of have a different hub every year, I think, don't you?
That's right, yeah. We tend to move around and make life complicated for ourselves. We've been in the gas hall, we've been in big drafty warehouses, we've been in empty shops. The idea of the hub really is that it's somewhere that you can drop in, get a drink, pick up a brochure, watch a few films, and work out what you might do with your Flatpak day. I think this year we're going to have a happy hour every afternoon where we show happy films and offer drinks deals, and that's really for people who come in. You know, we get quite a few visitors from outside of Birmingham for the festival, and the city can be a little bit difficult to navigate, I guess, so the hub acts as a bit of a base camp.
Now that happy approach, I think, comes across in the brochure, mm-hmm. kind of programme almost for the festival, which is a beautifully designed, I've got one here, piece of art, I would say.
Thank you.
I've looked at it as a PDF, but it doesn't do it justice.
No.
If you can grab one. But there's another F that comes across, which is fun.
Mm.
You know, you want people to enjoy this and to have fun. And what I mean by that is that sometimes you go to a festival to sort of, to be, you know, provoked, don't you, or to be challenged. But this is very much about, there's some of that, but this is very much about having fun through innovative things.
Yeah, absolutely. Playfulness is at the heart of it. And there are serious, heavy-duty bits of art. But on the whole, I think it's about people coming away feeling excited by what film can do and maybe feeling like they could make something themselves as well. I feel like it's nice to have a bit of a fuzzy boundary between the artist and the audience. Lots of people are obviously making things themselves anyway. There's a nice event on the Friday night called Oh Dear Video Diary where people are sharing embarrassing teenage films that they made, digging up old VHS tapes for Titanic remakes and that kind of thing. I'm quite looking forward to that. So it's really the idea that, you know, anyone could do this stuff. It takes work and good ideas and craft, but it doesn't all have to come down a tube via Netflix or Hollywood or whatever.
Well, let's talk a bit about some of the showcase events.
Yep.
One in particular I wanted to talk to you about, and one of the reasons I tracked you down was something called Birmingham 68 Revisited,
mm-hmm.
which I think has a kind of fascinating backstory, and in some ways it demonstrates how the festival's evolved as well, and how, you know, how it's something you picked up and moved on to the next stage.
Well, we often have some kind of local history element to the programme. We've done stuff about the old Odeons, that, you know, the 1930s Odeons that started life in Birmingham, or a walk around underground tunnels. You know, we're early film shows in the 1900s. We're kind of local history nerds as well as film festival programmers. And last year we had a whole focus on Birmingham in 1968, really just because we felt it was a fascinating time for the city. Like, the city we know today was kind of formed in the 60s, not obviously through the whole flattening of large areas and the building of the Ring Road and all of that kind of thing, but also the kerfuffle that was going on around immigration and housing in that period, Enoch Powell and the music scene and student activism. And it was an attempt to join the dots between all of those different things and say, you know, you might have thought the 60s didn't make it to Birmingham until the 70s, but actually it was that climate that was afoot in the world more generally that had an effect on people in the city, and it changed things quite radically. So we had a whole weekend devoted to that this time last year, and then because we had some support from the Heritage Lottery, we were able to go and follow up on a lot of those stories and interview people afterwards. And we've had biker reunions, we've had student activist reunions, we've had arts lab reunions. It feels like we've been having endless 1968 reunions ever since, and gathering people's photos and stories. And we've made a couple of our own podcasts, particularly one about the Double Zero, which was a motorbike club run by a vicar around the corner from here, interviewing some of the old Double Zero members. So we were kind of all pretty much wrapping the project up, but there was one key element that we were missing. We had this photo exhibition focusing on a young couple from Ladywood called Frank and Val Cook. Basically, they were photographed by this American called Richard Rogers, who came over in 67 to study at the Centre for Contemporary Cultural Studies, which is a kind of famous pioneering centre set up by Richard Hoggart and Stuart Hall in the mid-60s as part of the University of Birmingham. But they were kind of off to one side of the main university. In the early years, they were set up in a little porter cabin, and they were kind of renegades in a way, and they were very much about letting students shape the curriculum and go out into the city and use the city as a bit of a laboratory for their work. So Richard Rogers and his partner Janet Mendelsohn, who's probably a more familiar name to some listeners because her work was at the Icon Gallery a few years ago, she did a whole focus on Borsal Heath. Her boyfriend, Rogers did a whole thing about this couple and their journey from Ladywood, which was being demolished at the time. So you've got pictures of boarded up houses and bomb sites. But Frank had a studio at the Mac, so he was on this interesting trajectory from background in working class kid in Ladywood to this more middle class world of the Mac, where he was painting and sculpting. And I think that sort of class story is maybe what attracted Dick Rogers in the first place, but through them he also captured the way the city was changing at the time.
68 itself is a year of considerable change, you know, across the globe. 68 is kind of cited as the year of revolution and mm-hmm. protest.
Yeah.
And often people think, in stoic old England it never happened, but actually there were lots of different levels of disruption that perhaps were happening but in different ways, and, you know, expressed themselves, you know, it came out, it erupted in different ways, or
yeah,
through different avenues. So some of these stories kind of capture that, but capture it quite personally, don't they? Sort of, you know, change and significant change just in day-to-day lives. Like, mm-hmm. you know, not necessarily people sort of, you know, smashing things up or waving flags.
No.
But dealing with considerable, you know, shift in their landscape or their environment or their neighbourhoods.
Yeah, there was a certain level of deference and an expectation that you wore a shirt and tie and had a suit, had a smart haircut that was starting to be broken down in the 60s. And I think the recurring theme we got from a lot of the then wide-eyed idealistic teenagers, now people in their late 60s, 70s, the story we got from them was we really felt like we could remake the world, everything was starting from scratch kind of thing, it was up to you if you wanted to make something happen. It was in your hands. You could start a band, or you could occupy the university, or set up a voluntary art space in a back street, or whatever. It was an element. It was a little bit like punk in a way. It's a sort of prototype of punk, with a similar ethos of don't wait for someone else to do it for you.
So the couple that are at the focus of this piece,
yeah.
There's some intrigue around them, I think, isn't there, in terms of them re-emerging.
Well, yeah, we always hoped that we would find Frank and Val. And when we put the photos up at the Mac, because they spent quite a lot of time at the Mac, this tells you a story of what the Mac was like in that period. You get pottery workshops and people playing chess in the bar and all of that kind of thing. The show was only up for 3 or 4 weeks, and we found all sorts of people from these photos, but we didn't find Frank and Val. And we did a bit of Googling, and you know, Frank Cook is not a particularly unique name, so it was difficult to track him down. And we'd pretty much given up, to be honest, until beginning of this year. Jess Litherland at the Mac, who looks after their exhibition programme, she got a voicemail message from Frank saying, "I've just heard about this exhibition." So I rang them up and was delighted to discover that Frank and Val are both still healthy and going strong and now living in the south of France. And they were just amazed. You know, they've got quite vivid memories of this time, but they've seen very few of these photos since. And Rogers was following them pretty intensively for 6 months, so there's hundreds and hundreds of contact sheets, and we only digitised a small proportion of them. And ringing them up that day was really strange, because I'd never spoken to this couple, but I felt like I knew them intimately in a weird way, because Rogers also record interview with them, and so you have a real sense of their lives and their parents and so on. So they probably thought I was being incredibly overfamiliar with them, because it was like when you meet a celebrity. But like I say, they were delighted, and they've still got family back here, and we're very happy that they're coming back next week for the festival to talk through some of these photos and fill in some of the backstory behind them.
Let's talk about some of the other bits and pieces for the festival lineup, because again, if you pick up a brochure, it is literally bulging with things this
Indeed.
Year.
Yeah.
Which is great, which must keep you busy, I'm sure. But there's a couple of things I want to talk to you about. One is King Rocker.
King Rocker.
So now, I'm not really clear what that is. I know it's some kind of documentary film about a black country band.
That's right.
Kind of post-punk band involving Stuart Lee.
Yeah, that's about the size of it. The film is half made, so we're not showing the full documentary. We're giving people a taster of it. And the background is Stuart Lee, who people will probably know as an acclaimed stand-up comedian. He started out doing short sets with bands in the 80s and recently revisited that, doing a warm-up set for the Nightingales last year. He's a massive fan of the Nightingales. I guess you could call them, if you're being crude, you could say they were like the black country version of The Fall, or post-punk. But at the heart of the band is the lead singer Robert Lloyd, who has a really interesting lyrical approach, a bit like Marky Smith. And they've had a bit of a resurgence in the last few years with some new members, and they've started touring again. They've never been a household name, but the people who are fans really love them, and Stuart Lee is one of their devotees, and he feels more people should know about them. And I think he's also really interested in Robert Lloyd's story. So the idea, his kind of take on it is comparing Robert Lloyd to the Cong statue that stood in Manzoni Gardens in the early 70s. It was only there very briefly and then got rejected by the people of Birmingham, and Stuart Lee's take on it is that Birmingham doesn't always treasure its cultural gems as it should do, and that the Nightingales also have been neglected a little bit. So it's interview footage with Robert Lloyd, which is very entertaining. It's concert, you know, on the road, tour documentary. There's also some ex-members involved, including Frank Skinner, who was auditioned to be part of the Prefects, the original version of the Nightingales, and they kind of recreate a sense of what the band would be like now if Frank Skinner had carried on being their lead singer. And so the idea of this event, which is completely sold out, so don't get excited if you're listening and you feel like running off and getting a ticket, it's been sold out for a while, I'm afraid. We're going to show a teaser, about 20 minutes worth of the film, which will be finished later this year. Stuart Lee's going to do a bit of stand-up, and then we'll have a conversation with him and with Robert Lloyd and Michael Cumming, the director. And they'll also be filming on the night, so what's nice is that Flatpak will end up being part of this finished documentary, hopefully.
That's a real swirl that captures everything then, doesn't it? You've got comedy, music, history, the festival itself.
Mm-hmm.
It demonstrates quite nicely, I think, for the kind of thing you're up to.
Yeah, I think I'm really excited about what comes out of it. It's interesting. Stuart Lee's not known as a West Midlander necessarily. Obviously, he went to school in Solihull and he has real roots here. And I think he's got to a stage where he's also quite interested in revisiting his roots.
Now, another thing I was keen to ask you about was this optical sound aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, that to me is confusing already.
Yeah.
But I think that's the idea.
It is, yeah, this is one of the bits of the programme that we always struggle to summarise in a pithy way. Essentially, there are lots of musicians and visual artists working in that interesting fuzzy area between visual and sound. They might be a musician who's creating interesting generative visuals, or they might be a filmmaker who's performing their work live. But this kind of hybrid area of audio-visual performance, which is often less narrative and more interesting shapes and immersive, quite abstract. We've got a performance on the Friday night by Natalie Sharp, who's known as Lone Taxidermist. She's a really interesting performer, musician, who's created these thing called skinstruments. It's a kind of instrument that's attached to her skin, basically. And she's talking about the experience of intense pain. She had really bad back pain, and she's turned this into a really compelling audiovisual show. She uses visuals, performance, and music.
It sounds painful, doesn't it? The idea of a
skin instrument. Yeah.
Sounds something that you wouldn't like.
Yeah, quite possibly.
And there's also, I think, you mentioned earlier on the use of sort of VHS video diaries from way back. There's quite a lot of, I guess multimedia is a kind of outdated term now, but there's quite a lot of the festival which takes on early formats of capturing things, so different video and different sound recordings.
Yeah, we like old formats. We've got a 16mm screening of the Werner Herzog documentary at the Mockingbird. It's nice to show things on old film. But on the whole, the focus this year, as you say, is on videotape, because it's a real priority for archivists at the moment. People tend to associate film archive with celluloid, reels of film, but video is a bit of a time bomb, because those old formats from the 70s and 80s will gradually become unplayable. So there's a massive drive at the moment to digitise old videos. They're aiming to digitise 100,000 tapes over the next 4 years. So we've got a day at the Mac on the 4th of May, which is devoted to different aspects of the community video movement in the 80s and 90s, including looking at Jubilee Arts, who were in the Black Country, pioneering community arts organisation that has formed the basis for the Public. There's some really nice footage from some of their projects. And we're looking at Oriental Star, which was a record shop come booking agency in Balsall Heath, which put on the Qawwali singer Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan. And music people might know him, he's kind of legendary Sufi singer from Pakistan, who did his first performance outside of Pakistan in the Luxor cinema in Balsall Heath in 1979 because of this agency called Oriental Star. So we're going to be showing some footage from that performance.
And just finally, Ian, I'm very keen to ask you about something I think that you're helping bravely to bring back to the fore, which is the Moomins.
Indeed, yes. We're playing a very small part in this. I mean, it's the show, the new series, Moomin Valley, is launching imminently on Sky. We've been waiting for a proper, decent adaptation of the Moomins for a while. I think this promises to do the job. And we're going to be showing a couple of episodes from this new series at the Mac as part of our kids' colour box program.
Excellent. So Flat Pack Festival runs from the 30th of April to the 5th of May.
Yep.
And for folks that want to find out more and more of the kind of weird and wonderful things you're up to,
so
where would they go?
The lovely brochures you mentioned that are scattered around Birmingham, or more instantly, they can just go to flatpackfestival.org.uk and the whole program is there.
Excellent. Well, Ian, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you again.
Thanks, James.
And best of luck for the festival.
Cheers.
Thank you.